You're listening to the Talking Rheumatology Spotlight podcast, brought to you by the British Society for Rheumatology.
So thank you for joining us today for one of the Spotlights on QI podcasts. My name is Ros Benson. I'm a rheumatology trainee in the Mersey Deanery, and today I'm joined by Will Gregory and Dr. Beverly Harrison, who are going to talk us through the use of quality improvement in setting up their early inflammatory arthritis clinic. Perhaps you could both tell us a bit about yourselves. I go to you first, Beverly.
Okay, hi Ros. So I'm a consultant rheumatologist at Salford Royal Hospital. I've been here for about 8 years, and prior to that I was a consultant at North Manchester General.
Thank you. Will?
Oh, hi Ros, thanks for the invite onto this session. I'm Will Gregory, consultant physiotherapist, also at Salford Royal.
So, Bevy, can you tell us a bit about this QI project and how it came about?
Yeah, so it was quite early on. We were offered in the trust, they have quite a big QI department, and they set up something called clinical microsystems coaching. And they invited people, if they had any kind of things that they wanted looking at, that we could be enrolled onto this coaching program, which would be managed and facilitated. So we thought, well, this is a really good opportunity. And we had to think about, you know, what we could look at. We decided to look at the early arthritis service. I think one of the main reasons was that, you know, a lot of people were seeing early arthritis, nurses, consultants, other staff, but everyone was doing it very differently. So everyone just made up the rules that kind of suited them, and no one quite realised that other people were doing it differently. So, for example, the nurses, they had to do different things when they worked with different consultants, same with the pharmacists, and there was no agreed processes. So it wasn't that anyone was doing anything wrong, it's just that everything was all kind of quite random.
So you applied to, it sounds like you applied for support within your quality improvement department and your trust. How, what was this process like, and how then did you find it helped your project?
Well, we didn't really know what to expect. We got a bit of background that they would have a facilitator at each meeting. It would run for 6 months, and you had to commit to an hour every week, which we're a bit daunted by. Obviously, everyone's very busy, and an hour a week is a lot. But we thought, well, let's have a go. And in the end, it was time really well spent, actually. The process was quite formal, and at first that was quite a shock. But so we had the facilitator at the first meeting, and she laid down a list of about 10 rules that we had to all agree to before we were accepted as part of the process, which we initially thought were a bit weird. But in fact, in retrospect, I found them really helpful, and I've kind of sometimes tried to stick to those rules for other meetings that we've had.
Well, did you find that these meetings help keep the QI project on track?
Yeah, I think as Bev said, it was a big commitment, an hour a week for all of us. But to actually spend that time together in the room thinking about the same problem was really powerful. And the way the rules were set out by this external support in QI meant that we had a flattened structure where we took it in turns to chair the meeting. And for me, as just a little old physiotherapist, it was really quite powerful to think about how we were all level on this and bringing our own experience in. And I think it helped us grow as a team, as well as develop an effective EIA service.
And did the same people come to the meeting each week, or did you have a rolling rota?
I think we had a few key members of the group that were consistent week in, week out. We reflected that sometimes we didn't always have the right person to answer the questions that were brought up on a meeting. But because it was every week, well, we could just wait 7 days and then make sure we invited that person, whether it be input from pharmacy or radiology or whoever it may be, to support that particular query.
Yeah. And I think one of the rules from the meeting you mentioned to me was that you had sort of tangible aims at the end of each meeting. Is that right?
Yeah, we were kept quite well on track by our QI support, so that we had little projects we all had to take away and report back on either the next week or if it was 2 weeks after. And we did chunk up the tasks involved in developing this new service. So it was never too much all at once, too intimidating to consider how you go from a fairly disparate service to the perfect answer. It was very much in small steps to get there.
Sounds a very pragmatic approach. And were there any other specific challenges you faced with this QI project?
So obviously there's just the challenge of the time commitments, and some of the issues that we had to try and solve were quite difficult to solve. But I think ultimately when we got to the end of it and we kind of made a decision about how we wanted the service to run and different aspects, it was kind of getting buy-in from people that weren't involved in the process and kind of handling that. Because obviously if people have done things a certain way for a long time, it can sometimes be a bit challenging if you say, well, actually, we think it should be done this way. So, you know, it was a little bit challenging, and we tried to handle it by, if we thought of something, we'd then kind of, you know, discuss it with them and gain their opinion and feedback. And in fact, to be honest, ultimately, everyone was pretty happy with it. There wasn't any resistance ultimately, but I think we just had to handle that. And yeah.
Well, did you find any specific challenges?
Well, I suppose the one that really stood out for me in hindsight was the fact that we came up with this kind of golden solution. You know, if we had everything perfect, what would it look like? And we wrote this, and then we looked at it, and it involved 13 staff being there on a Tuesday morning. We have 10 clinic rooms for 13 people on a Tuesday morning. So suddenly we're bashing our head against a wall thinking, we've got the perfect answer here, but we can't quite apply it due to restrictions outside of our control. But still, we have that kind of golden solution. So I think it was useful to have gone through that. But then it's how you apply it in reality that's the challenge.
And where would you say you are now with your early inflammatory arthritis clinic? Would you say that this project is completed?
I think in terms of what we set out to do, which was to design a service, have kind of rules about what you did when and who did what and pathways. Yes, it is complete, and we got a lot of what we wanted. We got a dedicated service on one morning. We got other staff involved that we hadn't had before. Like, we've got an advanced practitioner who's an occupational therapist who's there. We've got pharmacists there. We've got someone doing ultrasound scans. So in terms of that, and we all follow the same kind of pathway, so that works really well. But having said all that, we do perform quite badly on the BSR EIA audit in terms of meeting their standards. So we're not seeing people quick enough. We're not starting them on treatment quick enough. We're not able to get diagnostics quick enough. So we've kind of got the service, but we kind of haven't got quite enough of it. And some of that, as Will said, is because of room availability, but others is because, well, just volume of referrals and number of staff to see them. So these are the challenges that everyone faces, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And Will, how do you feel now about the project?
Well, we ordered it. Kath McCoy, my colleague, the advanced practice OT, audited a couple of years ago. It was a BSR poster, and it was the kind of real life application of a perfect QI project, if we're calling it perfect. And it did show that not everyone was still in the right appointment slot, and not everything was happening as it should have done. So I think because it is there, we've got better ability to change our staffing to hit the National Early Inflammatory Arthritis Audit targets. So I think it's definitely put it high up on the agenda, but I think there will always be QI in this area because it's such an ambitious target that we're set with regards to the weight to diagnosis and starting treatment.
And I guess outside challenges and such as COVID always come in as well, which only add to a very complicated clinic setup, don't they? And need us to react with our how we put this service forward. So I think, I don't know if there's anything else that you want to add. If anyone else is thinking about embarking on a large QI project and potentially setting up a clinic, if you had any tips to help them that you could share with us.
I mean, I'd say definitely see what support is available. Obviously it does vary, but Definitely, it helped enormously having someone external, if that's ever possible, because I just think it calmed us all down. You know, often it's difficult in meetings, everyone's tired, busy, whatever. And I think it really helped to have that formality about it.
Yeah. Well, what would any tips, top tips?
I suppose from my point of view as an AHP, I would say don't be afraid to get the whole team involved. So even if, you know, with Dr. Harris having set this up, it could have been, well, this is doctors doing a doctor thing, but actually the whole team were involved, and maybe it wasn't always obvious how the AHPs fitted in, but we really appreciated being a part of the process. And I think we've added to the final outcome by having such a broad team.
That's excellent. Well, thank you very much to Will Gregory and Dr. Beverly Harrison for chatting today and passing on pearls of wisdom from their successful project. Just shows how nothing is ever complete within the NHS. There's always room for growth and development, isn't there? So thank you very much. And we'll chat again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Ros Benson, a Mersey Rheumatology trainee. Thanks for listening to the podcast today, part of the Spotlight on QI series. I'm really pleased to be joined by Calvia Flora.
Hi, Ros. It's a pleasure to join you this evening, and thank you for inviting me.
Calvia is a specialist rheumatology pharmacist working in a London teaching hospital with an interest in QI. Calvia, can you tell us a bit about how you became involved with quality improvement?
Yes, sure. So for me, quality improvement should really be part and parcel of what we do in our everyday working life. But I guess looking back, I got involved in quality improvement when it came to actually looking at access to clinical pathways and how we could improve access to treatments for our patients. So what we needed to do was actually review some of our pathways, and actually it was a fantastic opportunity to do this as a QI project. So I guess that's how I became involved.
That's great. And you, I know you did a particular project looking at clinical pathways for patients with severe rheumatoid arthritis. Can you tell us a bit more about this project?
Yeah, of course. So at the trust that I work at, the rheumatology trainees, or the registrars, rotate each year. And one of the incoming registrars was keen on actually getting some exposure to clinical commissioning and how that worked. And therefore, we actually thought this would be a really good QI project for the registrar to be involved in and us as a team to support them. So what we did is we sat down and reviewed our severe rheumatoid arthritis pathway. And what we actually did is we looked at what we had in front of us, and then we came up with a plan of what we ideally would like. What we then did was we took this to the commissioners. So being a specialist pharmacist, we generally have very good relationship with our local commissioners. And I used my relationship with the commissioners to then open up the opportunity for this project to go ahead. I think what we did is, so then we drafted a guideline of what we ideally would like, and we took this to the commissioners in order to negotiate as such, with the end goal being quality improvement. So actually, it was a process of back and forth, very similar to PDSA cycles, where you plan, do and assess what you've done. But in essence, it was a very good exercise for all of us to be involved in. So there was myself as a specialist pharmacist, there was our rheumatology trainee and our rheumatology consultant, who again didn't have much exposure to clinical commissioning. So it was a very good opportunity for the MDT to work together, for them to gather more skills. So the QI project we worked on was a project to improve our clinical pathways.
It's brilliant, because as a result of it, you've really been able to improve access to patients for different biologic drugs, I think. Is that right, my understanding of it?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So the key that we wanted to get across is we wanted to have as much flexibility as possible. We didn't want our clinical pathways to be based solely on cost. Yes, cost effectiveness is important, but we wanted a flexible pathway where we could treat the patient as a whole.
And so it's interesting with your project because you started from a point of working where you are at now, and then with an idea of what your sort of perfect clinical pathway would possibly be, and then you use QI to be able to get there. And I think that's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's nice for us to be optimistic with our approach to projects, isn't it? And how we might be able to succeed. And I wonder if there are any particular tools that you use to help with this process.
Yes, absolutely. So being a pharmacist, I very much like the PDSA cycle. So PDSA, for those who aren't too sure, is a well-known quality improvement tool, and it's freely available on the NHS England or NHS Networks website. And what it does is it's a process where you plan what you want to do, you then go and do it, and then you review what you've done to see if there's been any benefit. And it's a series of cycles of PDSA to measure any deliverables from what you've done. So as well as PDSAs, I'm also a very big fan of using Gantt charts. And being a pharmacist, this is something that we are very good at in terms of planning and looking at resources. So Gantt charts are a good way of looking at a trajectory and thinking about what you want to achieve in the next month and seeing whether you're on target. I would also say I'm a huge fan of SMART aims, and one of the biggest aims in this quality improvement project was in order to get access for our patients within a specific time frame. So just to recap, PDSA, Gantt and SMART are definitely some of the tools that I would hope that people could use. And I mean, they're very accessible tools, and my advice would be just to see which one suits you and the area that you're working on.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think Gantt charts was only quite, do they appeal to the visual learner? Do you think that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Gantt charts, like you said, they can give you a visual representation of where you are and where you want to be. So for people who like either ticking boxes or having a visual goal or a target, they would ideally benefit from using Gantt charts.
That sounds great. And within the development of these pathways, what metrics did you use to help?
So there was a few metrics that we thought would be a good indicator as to whether this quality improvement would be successful or not. So the first stance that we took was to look at the number of IFRs, which are individual funding request submissions, that were submitted to the local CCG. Because ideally, if we had a pathway which was flexible and open and met the needs of our patients, you would theoretically see a reduction in the number of IFR submissions. So that was one of the measures that we used to look at the benefit of having this QI.
Yeah.
We also looked at user satisfaction. So we did some baseline metrics in terms of what people thought was how they viewed clinical pathways. And we also looked at the number of applications that were done via BlueTech and the number that were incorrectly returned to us. So for those of us, or for those of you who are familiar with BlueTech, it's an online electronic application. And normally we can monitor the number of successful applications. So these were some of the metrics that we used to show that our QI was successful.
Well, that's great, because I think sometimes we can be a bit fearful of metrics, but these are just really practical tools that you've used to try and show that your QI project is working. So that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so clearly, you at the end of the project, you developed some well-grounded clinical pathways. But what were some of the other benefits that happened as a result of this process, which were perhaps unexpected?
So I guess one of the major benefits was obviously having our main outcome, which was a flexible pathway, which enabled our patients to access the medications of choice, which were either cost effective or the medication which was clinically appropriate for them. So I guess we weren't tied down to selecting just a few drugs. I also think there were several other benefits through this process. And another one was our trainee registrar, who actually thoroughly enjoyed having meeting commissioners and learning how clinical commissioning worked. It was also good for our consultant, who had never previously met our local commissioners. So it was about raising awareness of what commissioners do, and actually they're people and they're professionals at the end of the day. So I think as part of being a rheumatology professional, it's about networking and it's about knowing who to go to if you have a problem. So it was some of the logistical and practical tips that came out of this. And I also think obviously there's benefits for our patients to access the right treatment at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it sounds a really fantastic project. So well done on doing that. And thank you so much for talking through this in such detail. There's lots to take away from it. And I think it just shows the applicability to quality improvement to all sort of areas of rheumatology, I think. So are there any final tips that you would want to give to anyone keen to undertake a QI project?
I guess the final... My closing sentences would be QI shouldn't be difficult, and QI we should try and make as part of our daily working. There's always processes or procedures or pathways that can be improved, and sometimes even a small improvement can go a large way. Like I said, there's many resources on the NHS England website, and if you're finding it difficult to start, maybe start as part of a team or part of a project, and the more you do, the more easier it is.
That's brilliant. Oh, well, thanks so much, Kavir, for sharing all these nuggets of wisdom with us and all the details of your project, which hopefully have gone to inspire many others. Well, thanks very much.
Okay. It's a pleasure, Roz. Thank you for having me. And I do hope we've inspired you to go out and do some QI.
Brilliant. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hi, thanks for joining us. I'm Roz Benson, I'm a rheumatology trainee in the Mersey Deanery, and as part of the Spotlight on QI, I will be talking today with Gabby Ford. Gabby is a highly specialist physiotherapist working in the Northwest.
Hi, Roz.
So, Gabby, you're going to talk to us today about a really interesting project that you started back in 2016 called GoTo Physio. Could you tell us a bit more about how the project came about?
Hi, yes, and thanks for having me today. So actually I don't think I would have gone for the non-clinical opportunity that this QI project offered if I'd not been successful in a clinical job just before, which at the time I was pretty gutted about, to be honest. I'd always thought I'd go down the advanced practitioner route and then was pulled up short when I didn't get the job. But firstly, should I just briefly tell you about what those videos about?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, so it was about implementing patient direct self-referral to our musculoskeletal physiotherapy service. As you said, this started in 2016 and is still going stronger than ever now in 2021, 5 years later. GoTo Physio is about empowering our patients to positively influence their own health, really striving to ensure they see the right practitioner at the right time. So back to the question, how did the project come about? Well, the funding for this GoTo Physio project was secured by my manager before I even got involved. And then the post was advertised for a 12-month project. I took the opportunity and was successful. And then my manager and me realised that the allocation of money, for the funding of this project actually would be better if we rejigged it a bit. And this was because we realised that I needed some project management support. It was a citywide project, including 46 GP practices, secondary care, and a population of about 240,000 people. Now, I know 240,000 people don't all need physio at the same time, but we were ambitious, and we wanted the awareness of direct self-referral to be realised citywide. And so the clinical fellowship with HALO came about. Now, HALO were an innovation and improvement science centre in the Northwest, who've now merged with Aqua, also in the Northwest. And how it came about was just really about being bold in our asks. I was bold in talking to my manager that I needed project management support. And then she was bold in finding out what there was out there support-wise and asking HALO for a clinical fellowship. And so I guess another learning point from that was that you don't always have to have it all worked out exactly before you put a bid in for something, or indeed before you apply for an opportunity. Or if it needs to change and look a bit different, to be bold in changing it or asking if you can change it. I have to confess, when I went for the opportunity, I went without really knowing what it was going to look like and never having done anything bigger than local service redesign. And I think really this was a good lesson for when I was conducting my QI project. QI isn't about having the solutions at the beginning of the work. It's about identifying the problem, which is easy to say, but much harder in practice, and then testing your way to a solution. The solution may not be what you expect, because you don't actually know what will drive your biggest improvements until you begin to test them out. So yes, that's how the project came about.
That's great. It's interesting seeing how you undertake a project when it's so large in its conception and how it can be successful. One of the important aspects of QI is that we try to understand the problem within the system that it's based in, as opposed to being too solution focused at the beginning. On your go-to physio project, how did you find this approach?
Yeah, so this was a revelation for me. And I hope those of you that are interested in the QI journey find this approach as valuable as I have. I think in healthcare, we're very good at coming up with solutions. All too often, we are solution-based. And it's because we want to fix things, isn't it? It's almost how we and our professions are wired. But actually, by being purely solution based and not thinking about what the problem is that we're trying to fix, it may mean we end up trying to fix the same problem over and over and over and over again, which is frustrating, isn't it? So a good analogy that my colleague has used, which I found really useful, that I thought I might just share with you today, is this. He was on his way to work and he got in his car, which he kept in his garage. The door was electric and he buzzed it and out he went to work. He was down his drive and then realised at the bottom of his drive that he had a flat puncture. He fixed his tyre, pretty annoyed about it all, thought it was a bit weird, but went off to work. Then the next day, he didn't think anything of it, jumped in his car and went off to work. The same thing happened at the bottom of his drive. He thought there must have been glass or something on his drive. So he changed the tyre and sorted out his drive and thought nothing more of it. The following day, you guessed it, the same thing happened. He had another flat tyre, even though he got the glass off his drive. So he went back into the garage and this time found that a box of nails had fallen off a shelf. So he put the box back on the shelf and thought that was the end of it. But you guessed it, the following day, the same thing happened. Once he got to the bottom of his drive. So he went back to the garage and there was another few nails on the floor, which he couldn't believe. He looked at the box they were in and on closer inspection, the cardboard box was damp and wet. And so the nails had kept falling out. So he got a new box to put the nails in and thought it was all sorted. But yeah, you guessed it. The same thing happened the following day. I bet the tyre company were pretty pleased about this. This time he realised that there was in fact a hole in his roof, which meant there was water dripping through onto the box of nails, causing the nails to drop to the floor and puncture the tyre. So as you can see, the actual problem was the hole in the roof, not the glass on the drive, not the nail on the floor, and not the cardboard box the nails were in. So from that analogy, if you don't work your way back to the root of the problem, you may end up fixing only part of the issue or have to keep fixing it over and over again, which, as I said, none of us want to be doing. If we don't get to the root of the problem, we won't get the improvement we're looking for either. Or you may only be realising a small improvement when, in fact, you could have made a much larger improvement with more impact. So a system is designed and set up to produce the outputs and results it produces, isn't it? And our NHS is just the same. It's a system that's designed and set up to produce the results it does. Therefore, if you keep doing the same thing, you'll always get the same results. If you don't do enough of a change or an improvement, the system will produce the same results and you won't see that improvement that you're striving to see. Like the analogy, sorting out the drive didn't change the results. He still had a puncture. So with my go-to physio project, I was given the problem. We didn't have self-referral, but I had to go further back to discover why not having self-referral was a problem. That's so what question, which was about inequality of access for our service users and really empowering our patients with their health choices, and also about reducing unnecessary GP appointments. And I guess another key reason why it's worth spending time getting to the root of the problem is that then you need to be able to articulate what the problem is to engage others. Again, that so what question needs to be answered to those people that are your key stakeholders and those that you're really asking to do things differently. And with Go2 Physio, we had a 90-day collaborative with all the key stakeholders. So it's absolutely vital that I was able to name the problem to this group of people, this group of stakeholders, to enable them to work collaboratively towards a solution.
That's a great answer. There's lots to think about. It's a really good analogy, Gabby. And I mean, it just emphasises, doesn't it, how complicated the NHS is and how many of the systems we work in. We can assume that there's an obvious solution, but actually often that's not the case.
And it's much harder in practice. I'm not underestimating that at all.
No, but it's useful actually to have the principles, isn't it, when you're approaching big problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's narrow. And clearly, Go2 Physio is a really large QI project, which is very much still ongoing and successful. We don't always stay in the same job, do we, forever? And we move on. But obviously, we don't want, when we move, for hard work that we've put in place to sort of wither away. And how do you ensure, when you've been in a project like Go2 Physio, that the work you've done is sustainable, even when you move to another role?
Yeah, so this is I think sustainability is really it's a really good question. It's a really key question and a really difficult one as well, because we're all aiming that our improvement work becomes sort of hardwired into normal life, aren't we? And the old way will be forgotten forever. But actually, we know that doesn't happen every time. I'm sure we can all think of brilliant improvement projects that just never get off the ground and are never sort of hardwired into that business as usual. I think firstly, I was quite bold at the end of my 12-month project, and I asked for one day a week to embed Go2 Physio and continue with embedding it into our systems. And I asked for the one day a week for another 12 months, which I felt quite bold in asking for at the time. So at the time that the project ended, about 25% of our referrals from our city were coming via Go2 Physio. And I firmly believe if I hadn't have got that one day a week to continue to embed it, I don't think it would have increased. In fact, I'm pretty sure it would have reduced and possibly disappeared. Go2 Physio is now the preferred method of referral for our patients, with over about 75% of our referrals coming via this self-referral route. But it took a lot of hard work. It stood the COVID test and remains probably stronger than it was pre-COVID, to be honest. So in that one day a week, as I say, I worked hard. I worked hard at the processes. I worked hard at relationships, both within primary and secondary care. And I just took opportunities where they arose. So I wasn't entirely sure where that was going to take me, but I went wherever it needed me to go. So there was, at the time, there was a piece of work out in the CCG going on around care navigation in primary care. So I jumped into that and got Go2 Physio to be one of the first services for primary care colleagues to navigate to. So it was just knowing what was going on and making sure I could listen to what was going on, and then taking the opportunities that came up. I also think writing it up as an abstract for a conference or taking opportunities to share the learning at events, I think that helped. It really raised the profile and made it really visible. And then as a consequence, it made it more difficult for it to disappear, because actually it was there and visible for everybody to see. My commitment to it, I think, has also helped, but this has been a real challenge at times. Sometimes it's nice to move on to the next thing, isn't it? And hand over your work to someone else or a department. You can kind of wash your hands of the difficulties and think, well, someone else's problem now, and you can start something fresh and new. And that temptation was there for me too. But I kept coming back to what was best for the patients. What was the problem that Go to Physio was the solution for? And this was something important, and it didn't feel fair on our patients to see it fade away. So I stuck with it. And I know that's not always possible for everybody. I know it's difficult if you rotate between departments or even between hospitals in an area. But I guess it's about thinking creatively and thinking collaboratively. How can you help with the sustainability of the improvement work that you've invested in? Because you've put a lot of time and effort into it. And as you say, I've now actually stepped away. So I've moved into another secondment, and this is with Health Education England. So I've stepped away from my department entirely until January 2023. So it is the ultimate test to see how Go to Physio fares. But I'm pretty convinced it will continue to go from strength to strength, and that it is now part of normal business. I guess also I've reflected on this sustainability question since COVID, and about just that, you need to think about sustainability as early as you can in improvement work. But it's also important for the unforeseen future circumstances. So at the time, you're trying to come up with a solution, aren't you, for the problem of the present. But actually, your solution may also be part of the solution for the future problems you face. So with COVID, patient self-referral was a solution for our patients who couldn't get into primary care. It meant that patients didn't have to go via our GPs to get to see us in physio. They had that direct access to us. And this was and still is vital for our patients, but also for primary care colleagues, who I think would all agree now don't need and don't want to be gatekeepers for physio treatment. So I guess, I've been reflecting on that since COVID in terms of what we do now may also be the solution for future unforeseen circumstances.
Oh, that's super. That gives us a huge amount to think about, Gabby. I mean, I think you've obviously left it in a very good state, and engaging stakeholders throughout all the process, which it sounds like you did, I'm sure will only have benefited that as you've stepped away from it for the time being. And thank you very much for chatting with us today and sharing your experience with QI and all the hard work you've done in Go to Physio. It's been fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Talking Rheumatology Spotlight, brought to you by BSR. Please do rate, share and subscribe through your favourite podcast app.